Last month, the podcast topping the charts in the popular business category in the United States and Canada was, unexpectedly, created by two best friends recording from their Auckland bedrooms. Girls That Invest, hosted by Simran Kaur and Sonia Gupta, started back in August 2020 and has now grown to over 100,000 listeners per month. The pair break down the world of investing and personal finance in a way that anyone, no matter their financial literacy or bank balance, can understand and access. Simran Kaur, co-host of Girls That Invest podcast, is with me now. Kia ora, Simran.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Hey, congratulations. This is all happening quite quickly, isn't it? Number one spot in the business podcast category in the US, Canada and New Zealand. Number two in the UK. How quickly has this happened?
Very, very rapidly. We, like you said, we started in August. It was just a side hustle or sort of a hobby that I started and kind of roped my best friend into doing. And we just told ourselves, look, we'll do it for a year. Maybe something will happen. Maybe it won't. And yeah, just in the last couple of months, it just shot up.
So 2 to 3 weeks ago, you were checking and it moved pretty quickly. This is what happens, isn't it? It's almost like a I'm not going to use exponential because that word's banned. it goes viral, right? It takes off. So you went from what, 40 to 20? Were you just watching it all go up?
Yeah. So Spotify and Apple Podcasts, they don't send you updates. So you just have to manually check yourself. And one day I decided to do my weekly check. And just to see us on the number one business podcast in the US, you know, above Gary Vee, above Dave Ramsey, like I had to lie down. It was crazy.
Just which platforms is it on, those two platforms? Because this is the mission with podcasts. And often when they're being reported, you see some quite creative selections as to what to report and what not. So is this on Apple and on Spotify? It's on each of their lists and they're both big, big players.
Yeah, that's correct.
Brilliant. All right. So what's, you mentioned the side hustle. So what were each of you doing, you know, for the day job in August 2020, which was, of course, in the thick of the pandemic? Were you studying or what was happening?
Yeah. So Sonia works in the insurance industry, and I actually didn't have a background in finance to begin with. I was working in healthcare. And what I was doing for myself was trying to learn as much as I could for my own learning, because I had just started working in 2020 and, you know, the pandemic hit, and I realized that financial literacy and just being financially secure, when you just start and, you know, the rug kind of gets pulled under you, you really do want to make sure that you've got your own foundations. And so I took a certificate in financial markets through the US, and it was just so easy. And I was so shocked that understanding investing didn't have to be as complicated as it's kind of made out to be.
In what ways does it get complicated?
I think the jargon, from what our listeners have said to us, is that the jargon and the way that it's presented, that, you know, you have to be a very rich old person and you need to already, you know, have a mansion and a boat before you start investing, was really a huge reason why people weren't beginning. And, you know, that's far from the truth.
Your audience is, the title is obviously appealing to women and to young women. And does that make up a lot of your audience?
Yeah, 92% of our audience are women. We do have a small selection of men and people that don't identify with either, but a large chunk of who listen to us are people like us.
So what's the journey that you've been on that you're now sharing? One of the things that, you know, is worth discussing is that often these skills, whether it's basic budgeting skills, whether it's understanding the power of compounding interest and starting early, there are homes and households and whānau where this gets shared and people learn it from a young age. But then there are also homes and backgrounds where it's almost taboo, or it's, you know, we don't want to talk about this because it makes us feel greedy or money obsessed. Were you particularly educated before you began this journey financially, do you think?
Yeah, I kind of had an interest in it from the get-go, and I'd always be asking my parents, like, you know, how much do you make? How much was this? How much was our car? How much was our house? What's our mortgage? And I realized they were comfortable in sharing that with me, but I learned very early on that you can't go and ask someone else that question. You know, it's not the Kiwi way. And I think what we really try and encourage in the podcast is if you just speak about it with your friends and family, you do really open up a whole new world of understanding what everyone else is doing. And, you know, we learn with learning with each other.
Do you think there are particular barriers for women and young women, or for the people who are most likely to be listening to you?
There's definitely a number of barriers that Sonia and I felt when we started our journey a few years ago. So when we were trying to get into learning about investing for ourselves, it didn't feel like a space that we were meant to be a part of. It felt like we were kind of outsiders, that we were coming in and, you know, we looked a certain way, or we were women, or we were young. And while we obviously learned what we needed to, and the information itself is not, you know, specific for men or women, just the way that it was packaged made us feel like outsiders, so to speak. And that's what we tried to sort of strip away with our podcast.
So what are some of the basic things that you've learned along the way and that you've now put out in these podcasts? What are some of the fundamentals?
I think the number one thing that we really speak about is that investing is not like gambling. And it's such a huge myth. It's such a huge misconception that we probably had when we started. But with, you know, gambling, it's a chance. With investing, you don't just put your money in, cross your fingers and hope that it works out. There's research that you can do. There's numbers that you can look at. And there's ways to take on risk that you're comfortable with. And it's more like a spectrum. It's not that everyone, you know, takes on very risky investments and you can't sleep at night.
Some of the fundamentals are also about your own personality type, and people tend to have a financial or a money personality type. It might be tolerance for risk. It might be you're more inclined to spend or you're more inclined to save. And is it important to understand that and build your investment plans around that?
Absolutely. We talk about that so much because a lot of people will come to us and say, well, how do I choose what fund to invest in? And it's really the other way around. You first, like you said, want to work out what is your risk tolerance? Are you comfortable with a lot of risk? Maybe for a lot of reward, you know, that might be someone that's interested in individual stocks or tech stocks. Whereas are you more comfortable with less risk? And in that case, maybe a fund or bonds might suit you.
So that's a starting point. We mentioned money personality, so the saver or the spender. What do you do with that? Is it necessarily that you change your fundamental personality, or is it more an awareness thing? And does it offer opportunities to say, actually, maybe I could spend a bit less, or maybe I'm buying some things that are needs and not wants, and I could just trim the sales a bit?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both really. Like, we speak obviously about budgeting and saving, but there's only so much you can budget and save for. And we really don't love the narrative where people say, you know, it's because you buy a coffee every day that you're poor, or it's because you brunch every day, you know, that you can't afford X, Y, Z. It's really a mixture of both. We talk about this thing called value-based spending. So if your value is that you want to buy a house in 5 years, you want to look at your bank statements and see, is your spending aligning with your values? And if it is, great. And if not, you just adjust it. And for some people, that might be traveling, and that's what their value is. And so that's where they want to spend their money. And that's completely fine as well.
Can we talk about what can often happen, which is that sometimes people save more when they have less than they do when they earn more? Now, some of that can be life stage related, right? You're buying that first vehicle or that first house, maybe, or you're having your first child. But what tends to happen as people's incomes go up, and again, you know, is one of the key messages, just start that savings / investing habit with whatever you've got whenever you can.
Yes, I remember when I was a student and I was just about to graduate and I was starting to look at, you know, what's the best way to be smart with this money, because I'm going to go from being a student to being a full-time worker. You know, that's a huge difference in income there. And one of the things that really struck me was this lecturer once said, you know, keep living like a student even when you graduate. And I was graduating as an optometrist. And so, you know, I'd been in university for 5 years. I took that advice and initially, you know, didn't really love it. I thought, you know, I'm finally graduating. Like, I want the nice car. I want to go and buy those luxury items that I haven't been able to afford for so many years. But it's so important, like you said, to actually watch what you're spending, to continue to spend less, and lifestyle creep otherwise just keeps catching up with you and there's nothing left to save at the end of the month.
For those who are feeling a bit hopeless about what's happened with house prices, what's happened with the price of food, the gap between incomes and cost of living, how do you approach this? It'd be easy to throw your hands up and say, I'm never going to have this, right? So I may as well just have a good time. How do you break things down to show that even though things may be unfair and things may be unbalanced, there's still a lot of power in your own hands?
It's a really good question. So when I graduated in 2020, I started working and, you know, house prices started shooting up with COVID. And for myself, I really had a choice. I could either be upset about it and kind of take it as that's that, or find a way to make it work. And so I moved to a city where the house prices were cheaper. I lived very, very frugally and started a couple of side hustles to supplement my income. And I was able to buy my first home by myself without parental help, you know, within my first year of working. And I know that's not the norm, but I want it to be an example of it is still possible. You might have to be creative. Some people might, you know, buy a house with a friend or a sibling or take on extra jobs, but it's not, you know, end all be all doom and gloom.
And that's that power of starting, isn't it? Again, I've got a student loan. What point is it in me in putting some money away or starting a KiwiSaver? It's the power of starting. That power of compounding interest still remains.
Exactly.
On the question of shares, I'm interested. You're a share fan. I'm a little wary being old enough to, didn't have any money in it, but old enough to remember, you know, the 87 share market bust. And to be slightly wary that some of these new platforms we're making that are really democratizing share investing gets to be a little bit like, some of them have got a gambling touch to them. Robinhood in the United States would be an example. But also one of the fundamentals for something like the share market is understanding its volatility and that there will be crashes and how to manage that. How do you go about talking to your listeners about the realities of investing in shares?
The reality is that you're absolutely right. There are ups and downs. There have been many crashes, you know, with we like to use the example of the S&P 500. And for those listening at home, that's a fund that includes the top 500 companies in the US. So Apple, Google, Amazon, you know, all of those big names. In the last 40 years, the S&P 500 has crashed plenty of times, but every single time it rebounds and it comes back and up. And if you look at the projection of what it's done in the last 40 years, it's an upward slope with lots of little, you know, peaks and troughs. And we always show that to our listeners and say, hey, look, if you're in it for the short term, you might invest at the top and, you know, in a year's time, it might be a loss and you don't want to be putting in money for the short term. But if you're investing, you know, for your retirement for 20, 30 years, while we can't use the past as an example of what to invest in the future, you can use the data to see what has happened in the past.
What are the biggest mistakes you think younger people are making with money? And again, I want to acknowledge how unfair their situation is compared to previous generations. However, previous generations have had their situations. My mother was a child of the Depression and four children under five in her mother's household trying to live in the Depression. And I saw that impact on her all the way through her life and the way she budgeted. She always had money to spend on grandkids. She always had, always dressed well. So what I'm saying is generations have had very challenging times before. What do you believe are the mistakes that young people are making with money, even in the circumstances they're in with the price of things?
I think the number one thing we come across is that people assume that if they don't earn a lot, or if they're just starting out, they don't need to have good money systems. They don't need to learn how to budget, or they don't, you know, need to learn how to invest. Whereas what we really see with, you know, some of the people that listen with us, if you don't learn how to manage the small amounts of money that you have, if you can't manage your $1,000 or your $5,000, when you get a lot more money later down your career, as you work up the ladder, you won't be able to manage the larger amounts. Then we have so many listeners who will make six figures, but they spend six figures. And at the end of the year, they don't have anything saved or anything to invest. And so we really find the biggest issue is people thinking, well, if I don't make a lot, it doesn't matter.
Some of those expectations around, I absolutely love the op shopping that's happening now. I'm loving the use of pre-loved goods. I'm loving Trade Me, because I think what's actually happening with a generation now that's just leaving school and leaving university maybe, or going to their first jobs, is that actually that idea we can have everything now and new is disappearing, right? And there's a celebration of the pre-loved, which is saving them buckets of money.
It's a really great movement, like just sustainability and, you know, taking care of the environment, but also our pockets. Like it's so nice to see that it's become very mainstream.
Simran, thanks very much. Come back and talk again, if you would. Maybe we'll pick a topic or two and do it again next year. Would that be fun?
Oh, I am absolutely down. This was great. Thank you.
Thank you. Simran Kaur, who with Sonia Gupton, produces the Girls That Invest podcast, which now roaring up the charts in the business podcast category, not only here, but in the US, Canada, and it's number 2 in the UK.